Cool, we're going to take questions and answers now. First, Ian Neal, another one of the blokes who was one of the first people to get involved in 9/11 UK, just wants to make a brief point.
Yeah, well,
I'm not sure what it is, so I hope it's good.
I hope so.
Sure, it will be.
Our founder.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Where's my emails? They're trying to kick off. Thanks. I just wanted to address the issue about how we make 9/11 appealing to social justice, anti-globalisation, peace, new age, green movement, all those different sort of circles, they all overlap. What is our message to them? And it's something around the sort of core messages that we got that 9/11 Truth has, which hopefully resonates with them, around, first of all, disclosure, transparency, accountability in public life. That we 9/11 demands that, but it also has relevance to their own agendas, that they require peace, transparency and accountability within their movement. And that we try and explain how were what the bulk of 9/11 Truth Movement is saying, i.e. a cabal within the US government and with complicity within the media, within complicity of the of Western governments, is covering up this story, the story of 9/11. That has relevance to their much wider agenda. And to illustrate this point, there was a recent article on the fifth anniversary from Schnooze, which Schnooze is a Brighton-based anti-globalisation sort of network and movement that talked about, well, if you really want a global conspiracy, then talk about the behaviour of the corporates, talk about global poverty. And I couldn't agree more. That's my background, and I know that to be the case, that the big global institutions do stitch up the world, they do stitch up trade, they do stitch up, rich people have the power, poor people don't. And I say, well, that's how, that is a real conspiracy for you. And I would agree, but my only question on that one is that, yes, that's in your face, but it's also, that agenda is also conducted in smoke-filled rooms, in secrecy, behind closed doors. Bilderberg meetings, if you like, or the World Economic Forum, or those sort of type of forums. So if the anti-corporate movement wants to... I get very frustrated by how we're portrayed to be purely conspiracy theorists, as if that makes us something distinct from the green movement or the social justice movement. That's not really the case, because to understand fully the global picture, the world we live in, it is a conspiracy up front, if you like, the make poverty history agenda, which will tell you that the rich will rule the world and stitch it up for the poor in your face. But it's also done behind closed doors in secrecy. And I would like to see us as a movement, 9/11 movement, being better at communicating why we are relevant to that wider circle of people and why we're talking to their agenda as well. That we're not separate, we're not a threat to them. We've got something to say to them, they've got something to say to us. Where is the problem there? And a lot of it is around, well, they don't want to be seen to be tarred with something which is discreditable, because if you like, the likes of John Pilger and so forth, they'll say, well, my argument is strong enough on its own basis to require a global revolution or a global transformation. We shouldn't need to go into the dark murks of conspiracy theories. But to get people angry in day-to-day life, they need to recognise how they have been lied to, in much the same way as people were angry about the Iraq war, about being lied to about weapons of mass destruction. There was a massive groundswell on that. I would say that 9/11 can have that same catalysing event, and many things will flow from that. And so it's not just about exposing 9/11 truth, it's about exposing a much bigger picture. And that should be our message to the left, is that we have something relevant to them that talks to their agenda.
I'd just like to underline that point and go on. You know, I was mentioning about the academic theological left, and I think what you're really talking about there is, you know, maybe I'm being too cynical here, I think it's actually like the guy at Schnooz is worried that all his supporters are going to go off and start working for the 9/11 Truth Movement. I think it's, you know, just like they used to be worried in the SWP. It's competition, yeah, but amongst factions. And, you know, I think, you know, once they start talking about hit conspiracy theories, blah-de-blah, that's just hysterical bullshit, you know. I mean, I gave my whole talk on why we most of us don't talk about conspiracy theories. You know, it's just, and I think, you know, as soon as you start running into the hysteria, you're then, you know, you're looking at somebody who's either very egotistical, a very selfish leader, or perhaps even some sort of a mole, you know. Yeah. It's the hysteria. I mean, there was a classic thing from David Corn of The Nation. If you track back the anti, the left that supports the 9/11 official story, it seems to end back at a magazine in America called The Nation. And one of the key writers on The Nation is David Corn. And he wrote a seminal article, which was copied in The New Statesman, in an article by Johan Hari, when he said, "I'm fed up with these nutters sending me emails about how bin Laden met the CIA in Dubai in 2001 it's all some Italian newspaper." Now, the only problem with that was, A, you know, it is pretty well established that bin Laden did meet the CIA in Dubai in 2001, but secondly, it wasn't an Italian newspaper, it was a French newspaper. Now, David Corn is a highly intelligent, very, very well-educated guy. That was proof positive to me that David Corn had never bothered to even open any of those emails. He'd made up his mind before he even opened those emails. And what was in his mind was, if he's not just an out-and-out mole, which there are a few of, was, these guys are challenging my power base. This is a movement which could take attention away from my hackneyed old Washington version of crappy old socialism, which nobody takes any notice of, but I've got my little readership. I'm very influential with this sad little group of people in the New Statesman. You know, end of story, I think.
Yeah. If I could just come back on that one. So the message we need to be giving them, it is not about competition, we are not a threat, it's about cooperation. We have the same agenda, a peaceful, truthful world.
And if they won't cooperate, then I think we should just talk to their followers.
Correct.
Right.
Another point rather than a question. Recently, I've been realizing how much of a right-wing support there is in America, which is actually a bigger challenge because a lot of these people are on the extreme right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my point to make is that we really have to focus on just the one simple thing, because it's really easy to get into a conflict with people with really extreme views to you. But there is a big right-wing movement in America for reopening the investigation.
True. Well, that's the whole issue. And I think there's a few poison pills around. I mean, there's one guy who was a very early and influential member of the 9/11 Truth Movement who has got some really terrible quotes on, I don't even want to go down to sort of mentioning names, but, you know, you have to be careful. You know, there are certain people that you want to keep, I think everybody here would want to keep well away from, in terms of anti-Semitism and issues like that,
who we could be smeared with. Well, I don't think you can keep them away, because then you're taking the same attitude as the people you're complaining about. My point is try to stick to the main issue, the core point, even if you disagree, as difficult as it is, with the majority of what they're actually saying, because otherwise you're saying the same thing. These people, the left, are having a hard time because they don't want to be associated. So by saying you don't want to be associated with those extremes, you're kind of doing a similar thing. So I'm saying you have to work on a strategy to learn this movement, to learn to be able to work by focusing in on just the one point, always just the one point, and avoid any discussion as much as possible on theories or philosophies or
I think people should talk. I'm not going to answer that. I think people should just talk. You know, I've said enough tonight. I've said plenty.
If you ask a question, can you put your hands up, please, so I can acknowledge you and we can keep some form of.
I think people should speak from.
Just let them just answer first.
I think it's a very important point there that there's two issues that flow from that. One, that the global elite are threatened, and one of the strategies they will use is to try and associate 9/11 truth with things which won't be attractive. They're not attractive to me, and they're sort of promoting hatred and division within the world. And some of the principles, we've got very few principles on the website that currently is the home for the movement in this country. But one of them is no promotion of hatred, and from that, then no bigotry, no promotion of racial division, political division, and so forth. So those that do have that agenda on the far right, I'm afraid they aren't welcome to work with me. Go and do their own stuff on their own.
There's a lot of people on the far right that don't have that opinion, but possibly some of the things they say could be construed as racist.
Okay.
And all I'm saying is I'm trying to avoid going into too deep conversations.
No, then I agree with you. Therefore, if they're not obviously promoting hatred, they are very welcome.
Next question over there.
Yeah, I mean, thanks. Just a similar point. Don't you think by concentrating on the left, you risk marginalising the message?
Now, this meeting was specifically on the question of what we should be saying to the left. I'm not saying we should only talk to the left, far from it. I think we should be talking. I mean, my book was serialised in the Daily Mail, you know, but I happened to be from the left, so we thought that I'd be the one to address. I'm not saying that at all.
So the first people we should be going for?
Well, potentially, but I mean, if 9/11 becomes a lunatic left, if you like, on this issue, people won't. It seems to me the small C conservatives.
Absolutely.
Is the key to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to what patriots.
That's where political parties, that's where
they fight their
ground.
Big Christian movement in there.
I mean, if you go to Patriots Who Question 9/11, I think it's the website. Is it patriotswhoquestion911.com?
And also, they're providing loads of whistleblowers because they've got lots of people inside the military who know that the official story isn't true, just because they know that it couldn't be true for various reasons. And so, you know, there are whistleblowers. And remember also that American conservatives, small c conservatives, are revolutionaries. You know, their constitution came as a result of rebelling against the British Empire in its early stages, you know. So they're not like, there's all sorts of different types of right winger.
Sorry, just that they.
I want to put just a different slant on this promoting of hatred, in that I lent this video. To a pharmacist around the corner where I get my drugs, and she watched it with a group of people, and she was sort of convinced by it, but she could not believe that people could be that evil. And so you've got this problem of evil and hatred within the very issue, really.
I mean, I think that's in plain sight, isn't it?
I had that from Tony Benn the other night when I asked him a question in his meeting. And I said, isn't it time for a truth movement? You've been skating around it and mentioned other issues of how, you know, the powers of being controlled masses and blah, blah, and how, you know, our freedoms are being eroded and all the rest of it. Don't we need to have truth in modern history and historical truth as an objective fact that we all now subscribe to? Because if we knew the truth about what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, I know what you're talking about. I know all about you. I know about David Shaler and blah. And it's much too complex for most people. And people, frankly, will never believe that George Bush murdered 3,000 of his own citizens. End of.
It's probably Cheney anyway, but we're going to be.
So this is where that opinion comes from people like him.
He's a theologian.
On the website, a few of us have been trying to engage the principals in the media, and Michael White, assistant editor of Guardian, has exactly that approach. Mark, I don't believe that the US government is either evil enough or clever enough to have carried this out, go away. It's exactly that attitude. No matter what you do, you can't seem to break through it. And I enjoyed listening to this tonight about the different factions in the left. I think the point I picked up here is, Why are we traditionally trying to, you know, consort, engage the left? Why? Because they're a body politic. They've got a history. We're amazed that they're not on board. I mean, this informal approach among the membership is surely the way forward.
Mm.
You know, we get shut out by Galloway et al. it's their membership, it's people that we should be engaging with. But, you know, forget the factionalism, it's people.
What I was trying to do was to produce the arguments that Tony Benn et al. Would find it the most difficult to wriggle away from.
Sure.
So, you know, don't but come up with the speculative stuff. You know, we've just got these facts.
Yeah.
And let's remember that whatever Tony Benn thinks about what the people will believe, that is definitely not true in America. Yeah. America has a very deep and very long tradition of recognising that Washington is run by murderous rascals. You know, that's beyond dispute. They're almost too willing to believe it, actually, in some ways.
Hold on a second. Just back to the point. I think you're holding up in plain sight. Is that the DVD you're holding up?
It was.
No, I mean that DVD is confronting the evidence. Okay. I mean that was quite an old one. I mean, if I was giving someone new to look at, I'd give them something to say, Press of Truth, which there's no sort of pods or any of the wacky theories on there. It's very factually based, and you cannot watch that and then deny that you haven't been lied to by the American government. And then you can start looking at the other theories, but just confront firstly that you've been lied to. Then, if you want research, if you want to campaign against
it. Basically, what Tony Benn is saying
is. It won't be available here, should it?
So it just came out, it's got a copyright license. We are going to start distributing it as soon as we can. I've burnt a copy, but it's all sort of hush hush, could get done for it, under the table sort of stuff. So shh.
But what anyway, Tony Benn is basically saying is. I believe, you know, that I am so trusting in George Bush and co. that despite whatever evidence you bring up, I will not look at it. I mean, that is almost, that's getting quite close to complicity, I think, you know.
Oh, then we've got Nick, and then we've got Kenny and Anthony.
In terms of the relevance of us here in Britain to the event, I wonder whether, to what extent, the possible follow-up events to 9/11 are relevant, such as primarily the Madrid train bombing, and then the July the 7th train bombing, and also the Bali bomb. Seems to me these are three succession of three events, all which give a demonised Muslim enemy in a way that is a kind of phantom enemy image that doesn't really exist. And it seems to me that this has this in common with 9/11. You get the core of the story, this Muslim demonise the enemy image, which if you look at closely at the events, it's just not there.
And the modus operandi is moles and patsies.
Yeah,
in every case,
like
you've got patsies, and in every case, you've got moles, allegedly. You can't bracket them together.
Oh, then we've got Kenyon at the back.
You know, the impact of some people, as Tommy Ben says, is that they just can't believe that this guy Bush or his cronies would murder 3,000 of their own people. That's how most people would think. I mean, it is very hard to just imagine that, and it's very hard to bring forth an accusation that, hey, this guy just murdered 3,000 of his mates. I mean, you've got to have a lot of evidence to substantiate that. And what I'm saying is there is a lot of evidence to substantiate that. I think we need to maybe put that evidence in its own box and say, when we make that statement, here's the evidence, here's the character reference for George Bush, and maybe we should... you know, maybe we should think that way and devote some space and time to that, because there's plenty of it, there's lots of it. In fact, the United States wants to microchip people. Last week's paper, they said that 2.3 million Americans had been microchipped. And, you know, how much more evil can you get when the government wants to take away cash and force everyone to take this microchip, which is against the very Christian beliefs of the government. So, you know, for them to run around saying we're Christians, we would never do anything like this, they are doing something like that. They're doing all kinds of evil on a worldwide scale. So you have a very strong argument, and you can engage with Tony Benn and those people making that argument very easily and very conclusively.
Yeah, I mean, just as another point on this, they won't murder 3,000 of their own people. I mean, Christ, we all know they've gone to Iraq based on a load of lies, and got how many soldiers has died now? It's well over 2,000 or something. God knows how many injured.
600,000
civilians. And I mean, no, this is just American soldiers, their own people that they've gone and killed on based on lies.
It's just exceeded 9/11.
It's just exceeded 9/11. I mean, and these are massaged figures. I mean, God knows what the real figures are. This is what we're being told.
On that point, I'd just like to say that, in my opinion, we're dealing with people who are far more evil than most good-minded people can possibly imagine. And George Bush himself has said that his greatest advantage is that people tend to underestimate him. That's the first thing. The second thing I want to say was on the subject of 7-7, which surely for an English or British group, that is the area that we should be concentrating on, a public inquiry about 7-7. 9-11 is the Americans' business. They have to flush that out. We need to flush out 7-7 early.
Yeah.
On that one, just to sort of flag up that... that I don't know what the next big event will be in terms of us as a movement will do, but one thing which is on the agenda is 777, July the 7th next year, they're planning a big national conference, which clearly will have a focus on the London bombings and the wider picture on war on terror. And we are looking for people to get involved in making that happen, basically, so I agree with you.
A lot of us here believe, I know a lot of people know there's a lot of inconsistencies in what happened in 7-7, the official narrative's a load of lies, really. I mean, they told us they caught this 7-25 train, researchers were going to them and telling them this is wrong. They still published the narrative. Then John Reed, I think, had to come out and actually admit that the narrative is wrong, even after they'd been told. So, I mean, there's a lot of anomalies. There's no CCTV. Why isn't that being released? There is that. But 7-7 didn't
help with the public.
But 7-7 didn't start the war on terror. 9-11 did. Crack 9-11, the rest will open up. And I think that's a lot of people's views on this. I mean, some people are. We are in contact. We know the people who run the J74 July 7th website. We are in contact. A lot of people are members of that as well. But the key is 9-11, in my opinion, anyway.
The capability for 7-7 is just about conceivable, whereas the capability for 9-11 is inconceivable.
So I want to go for the easy one first, then.
No, sorry, it's inconceivable that they could have carried out 9-11 without inside help, whereas 7-7, it's just about conceivable they could have done it without inside help.
I just wanted to say about that a common response about why would Americans kill their own people, or why would George Bush kill his own people? I mean, personally, I don't think George Bush had very much to do with it. He's not that
absolutely
smart.
Yeah.
But nobody in this room, or practically anybody in the US and the UK, has any difficulty believing Saddam Hussein killed his own people. Why is it so difficult to believe that an American would do the same thing?
Right.
Well, why don't we just look at the first Pearl Harbor event? I think there was something like 10 times the number of people. Wasn't there 30,000 people killed?
No, it was 3,000 killed, but it's equally damning.
Equally damning. I mean, this is where David Ray Griffin gets his title for his book, The New Pearl Harbor, the original, the old Pearl Harbor, if you like. There's very good evidence to suggest, well, for us to know that... Roosevelt at the time needed a reason to get the American people into a European war he didn't want to get into, but with all the bombing of the supplies, with the German U-boats, they needed a reason. And I believe there is evidence of transcripts and emails in those days, telegrams, memos, and so on, between Roosevelt and the Japanese emperor, that they needed some sort of attack, and I believe the words were something that Pearl Harbor would be ideal for this purpose. Mm. I mean, this is historical fact.
Prior precedent, and that is one example, but there are many, which are proven beyond...
Any doubt.
Any doubt, I believe. You know, I could reel off 10 that, to my satisfaction, are proven, that you're making the case that... Okay, you don't necessarily accept that 9-11 is proven, but look at these historical examples and show that, at least in principle, Western democracies do this sort of shit.
Beyond nationality. They're in a class that's beyond boundaries.
Absolutely.
They're in a class that's outside of our class. They're together, and we're just...
Quite right. Paul in the corner. You got to speak up, fella.
Couple of points. First one's not really too relevant, just shows you can learn something new every day. I'm a minicab driver and I'm proselytised to vehicle in the firms, giving and selling DVDs and leaflets. One of the persons I've picked up, you know, with her shopping and taken her home, gave her a leaflet, and later on I gave her a couple of DVDs as well. Anyway, turned out she was Greek, and she used to live in Ethiopia. And like all Europeans living in Ethiopia, when the communists took over, they left. They all left. But the interesting thing that I learned from her about 9/11 was that 9/11 is the Ethiopian New Year. And so 1,000 people, workers working in the Twin Towers, didn't go in that day, and so their lives were spared because they was their New Year. That's something that was just in neither here nor there, just, you know, as far as things. I mean, I learned off when the customer was on private facility last year. Now, the other thing was, how on earth could anyone believe that the smirking chimp could murder 3,000 people? Well, of course, it's been done so many times before. I mean, you mentioned Pearl Harbor's been mentioned. The idea about Northwoods, Operation Northwoods.
It's there explicitly in Northwoods.
There are loads of these. The Nazis used it. They burnt down the Reichstag, blamed the communists, and they shot a German guy in prisoner, put a uniform on him, shot him, faked an attack on a German radio station near the border with Poland, left this guy's body there, oh look, it's a Polish soldier, Poles did it, that was their excuse for going to Poland. Right, it goes on and on. Of course, Vietnam, if you go to the US Navy's own website, they now admit the Gulf of Tonkin incident didn't occur. It was just a setup. And who did it? LBJ, waiting in the wings when Kennedy was assassinated. Instantly starts up the war in Vietnam because they already had thousands of so-called advisors, but that he started it. We can't have this. People, you know, attacking American ships. Hell no, we've got to go in there. And then, of course, he did it again in the Seven Day War, the Six Day War in 1967. And maybe, I don't know how many of you know about the USS Liberty.
Yeah.
He personally sent a ship in. I'd heard about it before Alex Jones's thing. I didn't know. I knew that the Americans had hushed the whole thing up. What happened was Israel attacked the USS Liberty, a spy, American spy ship that had been sent into the Mediterranean. They attacked it with bombs, they attacked it with torpedoes, they strafed it with
napalm.
They attacked it with napalm, white phosphorus, and they put machine gun survivors trying to escape. They eventually managed to get a signal off to the 6th Fleet. The 6th Fleet sent planes to air assistance, and they were ordered back before they got there by the White House. And eventually LBJ himself got on the radio to the task force commander, to the 6th Fleet commander, and told them, bring the wings back. Right? They wanted that ship to go to the bottom. The idea of that was no survivors, because then they would blame Egypt, and America would come into the war, take over the whole Middle East. The only thing that saved them was a Russian spy ship came on the scene, was observing what happened. The attack went on for some 3 hours, and so the Israelis pulled off. The ship and some of the people that the captain was saved. And I don't just have this from the Alex Jones show. It was on the BBC about a year ago,
Operation
Cyanide. And also, the captain of the ship has actually written a book.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to Alex Jones, now even one of the US, one of the Israeli pilots has come out and admitted what went on. Anyway, it's gone on and on and on through the ages.
Okay, questions and answers, not statements, unfortunately. That's good points. I've got to end it. Okay, thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. Some very good points there.
Simon.
Just to follow on from that particular issue about George Bush murdering his own people, and to follow on what Dr. Guy said over there, I mean, nobody has a problem in believing that Bin Laden loves Islam, but is currently trying to engineer a situation in Iraq where people who believe in Islam will kill themselves and have a civil war. No one has a problem in believing that. But apparently people have a problem in believing that George Bush would do that. But another issue is the issue of the left and its current strategy to deal with the war on terror and the current drive towards imperialism and the countdown on civil liberties, in that it doesn't appear that the left strategy will work. Mm. When the opposition against the Iraq war started, it was reasonable to believe that Bush Blair wouldn't start any other wars. But they're planning a war in Iran and in Syria. And they supported a war in Lebanon. So the left strategy isn't working. Secondly, part of the left analysis actually supports Bush, because the left analysis says that there are lots of Muslims around who want to revenge on the West and will therefore either directly or indirectly support terrorism in order to do that. And that plays into the hands of Bush. And you know, you hear left-wing speakers talking about pointing to British intelligence, saying that, you know, Iraq helped to cause 7/7. So they're sort of depending on analysis from British intelligence and MI5 and MI6 in order to put forward their case. So the left analysis at the moment actually helps Bush rather than attacks it. And the, you know, the notion that left had, that which is that there needs to be a change, you know, that what's happening shows there needs to be a change in foreign policy, that's not likely to happen. So at the moment, the left analysis actually supports Bush and the neocons.
I'll just step into Noel for a second. Noel first.
Yeah, one important thing that David Ray Griffin points out in his latest book, which is called Christian Faith and the Truth About 9/11. And this is, he has a much more kind of theological approach in this book. He points out that during the 18th century, the period of the Enlightenment, we threw out all those superstitious religious ideas and got rid of the whole concept of the devil with his horns and breathing fire and a forked tail with an arrow on the end and forked tongue and all the rest of it. But what we also tended to throw out at the same time was the very concept that the devil personifies, mythologically personifies, which is that of organized evil. From that point onwards, we cease to believe in organized evil. And that is why we find it so hard to believe that somebody like George Bush, although apparently we don't find a problem with Saddam Hussein, could kill his own people. And I think it's okay, you don't have to talk about it in those terms, in terms of organized evil, if that doesn't appeal to you. You can put it in a more secular form and say simply, oh well, it's the capitalist class looking after their own self-interest. So, in a sense, David Ray Griffin, the theologian, the Christian theologian, is right, and in a sense, Karl Marx and his capitalist analysis is also right. They fit together. Organized evil exists. It is self-interest, looking after itself.
I'd just like to say, I think it would be a tactical mistake to go around saying that George Bush
absolutely
did it.
No.
We're not saying that. We're saying that
Chang'e
it would possibly. There is a theory in America, actually, that MI6 run the whole show, which actually isn't quite as stupid as it sounds.
Where are we at the moment?
I think it's
London.
I think you just think it's a mistake to say. All we're saying is that, you know, it's the official story is not true. A mass murder was committed. It seems to have had inside help. The anthrax people killed their own people. You know, the anthrax people did it. So all we're saying is that maybe it was the same people.
It's not saying it's hundreds and hundreds of people. It might have only involved 10 to 50 people. I think they put the war games on, put those fake blips in the radars, confused NORAD in the morning.
The Bush kept on his program in the morning. He didn't alter about 1 minute. He was speaking at this school in Florida, and 9:30, he gave his talk. Knowing that the both towers had been impacted, and it was clearly a prearranged event just to keep him.
I wouldn't say that with complete 100% certainty, but we know where you're coming from.
I'd like to just react to the general tone of the meeting and the feeling in the room. I'm amazed by how optimistic the general feeling in the room is, and by how optimistic Ian's talk was. Because in the email that I received, which brought me here, there was also discussion of a possible attack on Iran, which could be happening quite soon. Now, Ian, when he was speaking, was talking as if, you know, through normal politics and lobbying and stuff, all these wrongs are going to be righted. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that I see the situation as being very much darker than that, because if, for instance, something happens which could happen very soon before the midterm elections, which is a nuclear attack on Iran by the United States, the whole situation changes dramatically and drastically, and politically everything just becomes infinitely worse than it is now, both here and in America.
Yeah, I mean, what the USS Liberty or whatever it's called, done a docker in to block all the Iranian oil in the next 2 or 3 days or something. Or yeah, whatever it's called. Oh, it's not called the USS Liberty. USS Enterprise. Got some stupid bloody name anyway. But they're about to dock, and I mean, a lot of people are saying the Israelis are going to attack, and the US are just going to sort of be their backup. I mean, it is looking pretty scary at the moment. But what they're not going to get public backing without another false flag terrorist attack. So, I mean, Christ, something happens over the next 3 or 4, or next 2 weeks or something, then you realise you're not talking a load of crap here. But it might not happen. I mean, we can't predict these things in their entirety.
Can I just add my statement on to your one? Because it's valid to that. I'm also not as optimistic that it's going to be that easy to turn this thing around. And I just want to point out that all of the pieces are in place, especially in America now, where the Constitution is basically being torn apart. There are, to my knowledge, I'm quite confident about this, there are concentration camps that are built around the government and are empty currently. Yeah. And the next event, whatever it's going to be, if they went into Iran and people started to protest, you could easily find yourself getting carted off into one of these concentrations,
yeah,
as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I read the Observer for the weekend, and I know Andrew Rawns, who's quite almost sort of right-wing commentator as such, as the head of politics there, he was going on about how, I mean, the elections are the next couple of weeks, aren't they? And Democrats are absolutely storming ahead in the polls, and Karl Rove still said we're going to get this October surprise. God knows what that's going to be. We haven't seen it yet, but expect something to happen in the next few weeks for them to get power. And even Andrew Rawns, a right-wing commentator, said if the Democrats gain power in the Senate and the Congress, they're going to start asking awkward questions about things like 9/11 and the Iraq War. Now, for a right-wing commentator to even mention that the Democrats are going to start asking awkward questions about 9/11 is a step forward in the right direction, as far as I'm concerned. And, I mean, South Park did a bloody 9/11 show last weekend. I mean, 9/11, South Park did this 9/11 show. Advertised 9/11truth.org all over this bloke's t-shirt. 9/11truth.org couldn't handle the traffic that went there the next day. It is building, it really is building.
I realise that, I know we've come a long way, but it's just going to be so easy at this moment in time for them to stop us.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question? I thought your comment was very good about the optimism, which is one characterisation of it. How does an escalation in Iran affect things politically? Because you made an important point about that.
Well, for one,
how does it get much worse politically?
What is likely to happen in Iran, what has been fairly widely trailed, if you like, if you've read, for instance, Seymour Hersh on this, is that to do what they want to do, they will have to use nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Now, if the Americans use nuclear weapons against another country, suddenly the whole political situation changes dramatically, because that is unacceptable to a wide range of people.
So China and Russia.
Quite apart from what happens globally.
Does that cower us further, though? I mean, it's almost like the cat's out of the bag, then, isn't it?
Well, it depends. I mean, for one thing, it depends on whether there is another false flag event prior to that, which could be something so terrible, so awful, that everyone comes on board.
They could crash the economy.
Hold on.
Then that's what I'm looking
at. Let's check that over here.
Any second now?
Yeah, sure.
We've actually perhaps been debating on from this. I just wanted to ask. We were talking about George Bush being willing to kill thousands of his own people. Who here really believes that America is actually run by the Democratic President of the United States?
He's not democratically elected anyway.
I've felt for years that America is basically an oligarchy.
Yeah.
And the politicians are basically there as frontmen. The sleaziest of the frontmen gets to be president.
I mean, you don't have to go into your Illuminati and all that bollocks. It's not. It's the bloody people. Look at the pharmaceuticals. It's the pharmaceutical industry and the military industry are the two biggest industries in the world. They are the guys that are pushing things, and they are the guys that are lobbying Parliament or Congress, spending millions. There's no great lizard men out there. It's just corporations that are doing this kind of thing. There might well be lizards out there, but I don't care. Whatever's happening, there's a pharmaceutical industry, the military industrial complex that are running things. It's not a conspiracy. It's fucking plain to see.
Could I just respond to about how, as a sort of head in the clouds optimist, because I am very optimistic about how things will work out, and I think what would help the 9/11 truth movement is to describe how, using past historical examples, how people power can wrestle power from a corrupt elite. There's many, many examples of this, and basically they have power because we all, one, our ignorance, and two, that we go along with it.
That's insane, yeah.
And as soon as we remove our tacit cooperation with this, even if it's a general strike or it's a question, peaceful civil disobedience will bring this down. But the key challenge is winning over the vast majority of public opinion and describing it in such a way that transformation can happen peacefully, that you describe it in such a way that people feel safe to come on board to demand the truth and to demand an end to this madness. That there is an opportunity for people to stand up and to change this thing. And we need, you know, our biggest obstacle is our fear and our belief that we can't change anything. Mm-hmm. As soon as if we're united, and this is why the message to the left is so important, if we're united with the peace movement and the green movement and the social justice movement, and together we have got a common message for people power and to drive these corrupt politicians and their lackeys from power, we can do it. But we need to be also clear that it's through peaceful transformation rather than through, as soon as we go down a violent transformation route,
they'll be violent.
They will be violent, and we will lose. They will win that one. But we've got many precedents to show that people can come together and wrestle that power away. And you just look at popular revolutions around the world. The key problem with revolutions in the past is that there wasn't a full understanding of the bigger picture of how you've been played, or we have all been played in this game that the powerful play on. So that. But once you get that concept, then I don't think there's any stopping us. But we do live in dangerous and worrying times.
Can I just quickly add to that, just quickly?
Very quickly.
Anyone here tell us that peaceful non-violent action doesn't work? They should find out what happened recently in Nepal. But look at that, they've thrown out an absolute rule of a king. They face considerable repression from the police because you have thousands of people united on the streets. A recent example, what you're suggesting does work, it's not just theoretical.
Yeah, well, I believe so.
Kenyon?
I want to pick up on the pessimistic comments of the gentleman over there that America may attack Iran. I think it's true they may, because Bush needs a smokescreen. They have the Enterprise Carrier Group and the Eisenhower Carrier Group there, and not for nothing. But what's interesting is that the Americans are there, and the Iranians are smart. The Iranians are going to the Pentagon website where they've done the whole battle game and found that the Americans are going to get their butts kicked. Because if the Iranians just use enough ships, enough even one-man motor ship, it will totally destroy the Navy's capability to wage war offshore. I know because I was in the Navy. You will destroy the communications when you overload the number of images that appear on radar screens and your four or more watchmen on every ship at every time, they could end up losing about 20,000 sailors and two whole carrier groups if the Iranians are smart. And where would, and as I said, the Iranians, all they have to do is look at the Pentagon website, and it tells Iran how to destroy a whole carrier group there in the Gulf. So we live in dangerous times, but interesting times.
Cheers, Ken. I think it's sort of two sides of the same coin. Because the situation is so bad, you know, what we're worried about is, and this is in a sense, you know, our responsibility is, as we, you know, draw attention, and possibly this is Tony Benn's unconscious fear if he is an honest person, which I have to say I'm beginning to doubt slightly, although I've always been a great supporter of his, that, you know, because we're catching up with them, they're going to have to escape forwards, which is, you know, sort of political expression, and do something like that. But let's remember, what worse can they do? The false flag. I mean, the obvious one is, maybe this is all a bit fanciful, but, you know, the obvious one is a minor nuclear attack in a small American city where none of Cheney's friends live, basically. You know, and I think, you know, that is something, I'm sure that is a possibility. But remember, and this is where we get back to the small C conservatives, they've got to get it past the local police force. You know, they've got a few hurdles. You know, this was probably not a big group who carried out 9/11. I mean, I'm working on the scenario where actually it would be quite a small group who would have been witting murderers. You know, the others would probably just have thought they were taking part in some sort of special operation. And sure, they wouldn't have dared talk about it afterwards, but they're probably waiting to. But, you know, I don't think it's quite as easy. And if they do it without a false flag operation, it'll be an absolute disaster for them, no doubt about that at all. You know, they've got to have a false flag operation to get it justified.
Hold on, sorry, just trying to keep some...
Yeah. Just thinking at a practical level, we don't have a cartoon show like South Park. And I was wondering whether the movement or campaign is thought about. I mean, if there are gatekeepers out there, whether on the left or the right, Pilger or Michael Gove, go to the seminars where they're talking, stand up.
We are doing. Don't worry, we are.
Pilger's a different kettle of fish. Pilger's a good guy. I'm sure Pilger's a good guy. He's favourably reviewed Nafeed Ahmed's book. He also is cited in John le Carré's novel, which is a very clear reference to 9/11, just right on 9/11 truth novel, if such a thing exists. Oh yeah, John le Carré mentions that he had supper with Pilger, and Pilger was one of the influences on creating that novel. It's called Absolute Friends, I think. Well worth reading.
Sorry, just over here.
Yeah, there's just one thing about,
you
were talking earlier about spreading, people knowing more about 9/11. I heard one thing about that, that you know more about it. There's a third edition Loose Change coming out.
Yeah.
People said that's actually, that might be going into the cinema.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's headlining at the Sundance Film Festival. I think it's Martin Sheen's doing the commentary on it. I think Tim Spark, who is the producer of it in, or owns the rights to it in the rest of the world outside the US, he came to talk to our conference this year, the 5th anniversary conference. Over this anniversary, the 5th anniversary, it aired in over 50 countries around the world. I mean, I went on Portugal the week after 9/11, turned up in this villa on the first night, didn't have any telly or any sort of satellite, whacked the telly on, there it was, 8 o'clock prime time Sunday TV, was Loose Change dubbed in Portuguese. I mean, this is getting... It's not going to get any smaller. Places like Malaysia, 85% of people think it's an inside job. These are the guys getting what's really happening. It's our media is actually suppressing
Channel
all this. Channel 5 have almost said they are willing to show it. We are actually... If you want to write to Channel 5, I can't remember who the head of programming is, but... Yeah, write to the head of programming, tell him to show this program. But
which one of the classics you wanted to show? I mean, put a number out there.
With Loose Change, Volume 2. I mean, the third one, I say, is going cinematic release. It's headlining the Sundance Film Festival, which is the premier documentary festival in the world. It's not going to get any smaller, this issue.
There.
There's also the very favourable business about the new organisation, fairly new, Scholars for Truth, when it's all these academics in the United States and other countries, all of them specialists in their field, engineering or physics or something or other, and they're all speaking out of their universities into the public. So all these prestigious people in the know are now cooperating on this. And I was. This is going back a bit to something we were talking about earlier, but there are things that we can do. And if we follow the media very carefully in the news, there are some things that are really of great importance that are really played down. For example, several weeks ago it was announced that 5,000 British soldiers have deserted since the beginning of the Iraq War. 5,000 have deserted. Well, that's a very, very big number. And if there wasn't anything suspicious behind all this, it would be the talk. It would be the talk in the media. It would be the headlines. It would be in the discussion groups on the television news. But there's nothing. It's just got one little bit, perhaps, in a corner of the newspaper. And we need to point this out to people. 5,000 have deserted. Why isn't it being made more of in the media? What else has it been made more of?
I mean, going back to that media point, I don't know if any of you have seen this about this bomb factory in Preston that's come out in the past week or so. This bomb factory in Preston, a BNP bomb factory, it was the biggest bomb factory in British history. I mean, they had radioactive suits, they had rocket launchers, they had everything you wish to consider. This is only reported in the local Preston news. I mean, it's sort of picked up a bit of steam in indie media. A lot of the blog sites have picked up on this. I mean, it's been on the 9/11 forum, it's been on the Mark Thomas forum. It's picking up, and a lot of people write to the BBC about this. But the BBC's Debbie Moyes, who's Helen Bowden, who's the chief of news, her sort of next one down has written back and just sort of said, well, the police downplayed this, that's why we didn't report on it. I mean, this just sort of shows you the stuff that we're not hearing about. Yeah. I mean, if these guys were Muslim, Christ, we'd been every bloody newspaper in the country for days.
Yeah. Don't make a mistake on that. It's Nelson, not Preston. They're not very far apart. Sorry, but it is now.
It's in Lancashire somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Up north. Yeah. Up north, pasties. Anyone else got a question?
Yeah.
Oh.
But just on you got to put your hand up there. I think as a movement, there's kind of three things which really threaten the progress. The first is, as the gentleman there said, another false flag event which could disrupt the entire political landscape. The legislation is there to actually put distance into detention camps, like you're saying, in America at least, they're not sure about Britain.
In Britain as well. Civil contingencies, Bill.
The second is the death of the internet, because the internet's been such an instrument in spreading information, and there are movements in place to kind of pull that apart and, you know, regulate it, police it, and stop the spread of information. And the third is, which has come out of the White House recently, is the association between what are termed as conspiracy theorists and terrorists, and the conspiracy theories and conspiracy theory internet sites are a breeding ground for terrorism, apparently. And there was allusion to that in the 77 where it's not a report but
narrative.
Story. Yeah. So these are the three issues I think people should be very aware of in terms of campaigning. And if people are serious about this, they should campaign for the security of the internet as we know it.
I first looked into something I think Noel mentioned earlier, this Michael Meacher article going on about pinochles in about 2003 in The Guardian. And I thought, oh my God, jeez, I've been lied to. When the internet, and there's all this pod stuff at the moment, I don't know what people have sort of looked into all these different theories out there. I looked at this and thought, what a load of bollocks, conspiracy nonsense, going to walk away. There is a lot of nonsense out there. Don't let that deflect you from the real bloody issues. Look at a lot of the real issues. I mean, Christ, who knows who's putting all this nonsense out there? It could be them, it just could be some nutters. We don't know, but there is nonsense out there, but there is a lot and lot of real issues to look at.
Yeah, just to say, what you said over there was pretty much along the lines of what I was going to say, and the guy who said he had a more pessimistic view of everything. As you say, our freedoms are being taken away all the time, ever since 7/11, 9/11 rather. I think there was a whole wrath of freedoms went in the very next day, you know. just a coincidence, nothing to worry about, as David likes to say. But, this is something we need to worry about. There was a George Bush statement in Nexus magazine, just the recent one, which said that what you were saying on point two about how groups such as this would be seen in the modern world as, potential terrorists, I believe. Now, the guy over there said
there's good evidence in America of spreading of concentration camps, and that's a fact. And we got sort of John Reed pointing the stick about it.
Hello, Burton built them, didn't they?
That sort of thing here. I think there's also a very strong possibility, shall we say, of another false flag operation, either in America or in Britain, or perhaps in
Japan.
Any one of those scenarios is likely, it's anybody's guess, but I think the chances are overwhelming that one of those things will happen to catalyse this possible war.
Or even bad flag.
Yeah, on Iran, Syria, and even possibly North Korea. So they need another Pearl Harbor, basically, and I think we'll get one. And what we have to be careful of is when this happens, the Western world, particularly America, can just declare martial law. Yeah. And once they declare martial law, and organizations like FEMA goes in, and all our rights are absolutely gone down the pan, we won't be sitting here in this comfortable place. We'll all be arrested and being carted off to these concentration camps. This is what we have this freedom to speak like we are.
I mean, the civil contingencies bills, which is due to come in this around now sort of time, for one of the first bills they're debating, is saying if any is in a national emergency, they can control where we move, what we do, everything like that.
We will be the first to go.
Just need to look back at Hitler and the Enabling Act. I mean, just place that with the Civil Contingencies Bill or with Patriot Act, and they're the same thing as eroding liberties.
Okay. one point I'd like to make is that actually we've done a huge amount to stop. I know this went cutting the ice with George Bush, but of course let's remember that we have done a huge amount. If Osama bin Laden does indeed exist, and if he does intend to commit violent acts, we've been an absolute disaster for him. We've persuaded a huge number of people that if they work for Osama bin Laden, they're actually working for George Bush. Imagine how many recruits. That's what people believe right across the Muslim world. Potential recruits to Osama bin Laden. Because they didn't believe George Bush and believed us, are now not working for Osama bin Laden. They've understood the peace message. We essentially are the peace movement. And, the people who think the blowback theory and everything, they're the pro-war movement in a way. And I think there is a secret niggling. I don't want to be too unfair to George Galloway, but I think he's probably got a secret sort of happiness that somebody took George Bush's, gave him a bloody nose, on September the 11th. I think that's probably how he...
Along the lines of what I was going to say, and the guy who said he had a more pessimistic view of everything, as you say, our freedoms are being taken away all the time, ever since 7/11, 9/11 rather. I think there was a whole raft of freedoms went in the very next day, just a coincidence, nothing to worry about, as David likes to say. But this is something we need to worry about. There was a George Bush statement in Nexus magazine, just the recent one, which said that what you were saying on point two about how groups such as this would be seen in the modern world as potential terrorists, I believe. Now, the guy over there said there's good evidence in America of spreading of concentration camps, and that's a fact. And we got sort of John Reed pointing the stick about it.
Hello, Burton built them, didn't they?
That sort of thing here. I think there's also a very strong possibility, shall we say, of another false flag operation, either in America or in Britain, or perhaps in
Japan.
Any one of those scenarios is likely, it's anybody's guess, but I think the chances are overwhelming that one of those things will happen to catalyse this possible war.
Or even bad flag.
On Iran, Syria, and even possibly North Korea. So they need another Pearl Harbor, basically, and I think we'll get one. And what we have to be careful of is when this happens, the Western world, particularly America, can just declare martial law. Yeah. And once they declare martial law, and organizations like FEMA goes in, and all our rights are absolutely gone down the pan, we won't be sitting here in this comfortable place. We'll all be arrested and being carted off to these concentration camps. This is what we have this freedom to speak like we are.
I mean, the civil contingencies bills, which is due to come in this around now sort of time, for one of the first bills they're debating, is saying if any is in a national emergency, they can control where we move, what we do, everything like that.
We will be the first to go.
Just need to look back at Hitler and the Enabling Act. I mean, suppose that with the Civil Contingencies Bill or with Patriot Act, and they're the same thing as eroding liberties.
Okay. one point I'd like to make is that actually we've done a huge amount to stop. I know this went cut in the ice with George Bush, but of course let's remember that we have done a huge amount. You know, if Osama bin Laden does indeed exist, and if he does intend to commit violent acts, we've been an absolute disaster for him. We've persuaded, you know, a huge number of people that if they work for Osama bin Laden, they're actually working for George Bush. Imagine how many recruits. That's what people believe right across the Muslim world. You know, potential recruits to Osama bin Laden. Because they didn't believe George Bush and believed us, are now not working for Osama bin Laden. They've understood the peace message. We essentially are the peace movement. And, you know, the people who think the blowback theory and everything, they're the pro-war movement in a way. And I think there is a secret niggling, you know, I don't want to be too unfair to George Galloway, but I think he's probably got a secret sort of happiness that somebody took George Bush's, gave him a bloody nose, you know, on September the 11th. I think that's probably how he... would have to confess that about 5% of me thought, well, you know, it serves them right. We've undermined all that, we've confronted all that violence. In terms of, you know, passing legislation, I don't want to be a sort of total optimist, but let's remember that during the Second World War they had the Defence of the Realm Act. You know, it is not new to have these terrible acts. I believe the Defence of the Realm Act still stands, you know, which basically means the government can do anything they want by invoking the Defence of the Realm Act. So, you know, and I don't think we will be quite the first to go. I mean, it'll be that our Muslim friends will be the first to go. You know, not that that's any great comfort, you know, but I don't think we need to go totally over the top here.
No, we're not saying over the top.
We are,
then. Anybody left of centre will gradually be rounded up.
Well, gradually, but, you know,
it's going to take some time to round us all up, though, isn't it?
In Neues Deutschland.
We have no power in the meantime.
I read an interesting article in Neues Deutschland, which is the journal of the German Communist Party, in about 1980, from a communist militant during the 30s. And he said, I mean, this cuts both ways, this information, but he said, actually, yes, they had the concentration camps, yes, they were putting Jews in them and lots of other people, but we, the ordinary street-level communists, were thriving all the way through the 30s. We did not have a serious, you know, we were causing serious problems for Hitler. We were resisting the pogroms and having effects. We were active on the streets. What killed us stone dead was the general mobilization of 1939, when we were all literally put in the army. I just offer that as an interesting little insight, you know, which is a little bit counterintuitive, if you like. I think they are going to have to go for a really big one, you know, and they have got the mechanism for conscription now, and they have. I think the concentration camps are to put the people who resist conscription, actually, you know, if it ever does go that far, you know.
I mean, as well, you look back, I mean, going back just to George Bush and the Nazis, I mean, is his uncle or his grandfather done for traitor? Prescott Bush got done for traitoring because he was basically funding the Nazis. And this isn't a speculation. This is historical fact.
Databases, then, so they can probably do a much more efficient job than the Nazis now.
Yeah, hang on, IBM were working for them on numbering people. And, you know, there was much more community-based then, so local informants in communities were a much more potent tool. I don't think it's that different. They're just not that good at it. They really do need war. War's the only thing they're good at, really. You know, all the rest is bullshit, you know, because if they go on informants, you can just grass up somebody who's actually working for them, and how do they know whether, you know, do you see what I mean? You know, it all gets a lot more complicated than... they don't know quite who to arrest.
They got the
internet,
though.
Well, they have, yeah. I mean, it'll be a big struggle.
Everyone's search, what people have searched, that is a potent tool. Who needs informants when you've got this kind of concrete, you know,
Records, do a few dodgy searches.
Well, I think Michael White and Tony Benn will end up, because they're checking out all the
maybe
stories. It's not as simple as...
I think there's enough people now, though, in the movement to not worry about what you're searching for on the internet, for Christ's sake. They've got too many other big fish to fry. Mm. at the moment.
In the current climate.
In the current climate, well, it's not really going to change.
They really don't know. My dad worked for MI5 during the war, and he said they really didn't know. They had actually rolled up all the German spies. They never knew whether they really had got them or not. If they do your idea, you know, they search. How do they know? They're going to miss all the really clever people who've been carefully disguising all their searches.
Sure.
You know, it is not as simple. You know, it's too easy to get paranoid, I think.
I hope I'm wrong, but I've been reading and looking into this for the last year, and nothing has persuaded me to the contrary so far.
You've got to be careful with peak oil. There's a lot of talk that says it's the oil companies that are behind peak oil.
Yeah.
This idea that it's impossible for science, I don't think you can ever say it's impossible for science. Human beings always come up with something new. This idea that alternative energy, I mean, Richard Branson has put a lot of money into alternative energy. I don't know where my opinion is on peak oil, but you just have to be careful.
Sorry? There are no hydrogen cars.
Well, no, because the oil people live sure they
oil people
long enough to produce them.
Why wouldn't oil people start looking towards alternatives?
Hold on, Kenyon, the back.
Oh, okay, two things. Originally, I just wanted to respond to Ian's comments about the concentration camps. I would disagree and say they're not for deserters, which wouldn't be quite that many, and that's not how they deal with in the military, which I took part in. But what they are for, and what has been an aim for over 30 years, is to deal with the contingency of American citizens who will not take a forced microchip. They're building the concentration camps with that, and perhaps other things in mind. But now that this gentleman has brought up the subject of energy, after having just written a book which deals largely with energy, especially ethanol, I can say we don't need petrol or oil. We never did. It's forced on us. Yes, there are people.
Absolutely.
But we can use a number of things, including ethanol, which is made from cellulose, which is just about everything in this room is cellulose. What you're wearing, what you're eating, these tables, it's all cellulose. And we do have hope about being able to produce our own ethanol, like Henry Ford wanted to, like the Brazilians are doing, like the Canadians are doing. So, yes, they're making issue out of this oil, and this oil is part of the wax, part of the process that's destroying the planet right now. But we can do a lot with cheap energy. It has been historically done.